Chapter 7. She was in the court of the Tokugawas, and she was a man. He was kneeling on a cotton pad on the polished mahogany floor of a castle, wearing a white silk kimono displaying the family crest, a crab superimposed on a peony. Two samurai stood on either side wearing kabuto of varnished leather, their hands resting on their long swords. Immediately in front of him knelt his son, Kenzaburo, 18, until the past week, an up-and-coming officer in the shogun's army. Kenzaburo wore a white silk kimono, also with the family crest. His topknot had been unceremoniously severed moments earlier. He knelt now facing a slab of sandalwood atop which lay a simple sheathed tanto. Directly behind Kenzaburo, feet at shoulder width, arms crossed behind him, stood the captain of the guard Kamoit Sotane wearing the double swords of his office. Shigeyoshi? Barked Grand Superintendent Mizuno Kawachi no Kami Morinobu in Japanese. The dreamer experienced the language both inside and outside. She could hear it in Japanese, harsh, indecipherable. At the same time, she heard its meaning clearly. You have betrayed your shogun by collecting forbidden swords? When ordered to deliver these swords to the magistrate to be destroyed, you distributed them among your retainers. Most infamously, you gambled your future on the failure of your shogun? For this most heinous crime you and your son Kenzaburo, a party to your betrayal, are ordered to commit seppuku. Shigeyoshi looked up, from under his hedgerow brows, and saw his son, his pride and joy, face so young he had not yet begun to sprout facial hair. He looked beyond his son, out the open door to the garden outside. It was overcast, and he could just see the branch of a ginkgo tree. Even in the pale autumn light, the leaves glowed luminescent. The breeze stirred through the great hall, bringing with it the scent of jasmine and horse manure. Grand Superintendent? Shigeyoshi declared in a firm voice. Permission for my son and I to compose our death poems? The Grand Superintendent, a squat, powerful man with a mustache like a swallow's tail, nodded curtly. He motioned for the guard to provide paper and brushes. Moments later, these were given to Kenzaburo and Shigeyoshi. Shigeyoshi had been working on the poem in his head for some time. The peculiar thing was, he felt no shame for betraying the shogun. He never liked the man anyway. He felt instead a transcendent calm, a satori which he'd never studied, but somehow, on the knife edge of death, achieved. He saw in his mind a long line of glittering blades extending back 2 centuries to their creation, extending far into the future, into a land that was as much straight up and down as horizontal, a place where life exploded in an unstable mix of barbarism and high culture. The universe tilted, with Shigeyoshi in the center. It was as if he could suddenly see all the way to the sun. All those glittering blades, extending far into the future, much farther than their origin in the past. The magistrate had always known he was destined for greater things. His own rise through the bureaucracy had been meteoric. He'd been hailed as one of the most talented of the shogun's administrators, and marked for great honors and responsibilities. Vanity, all, in the face of the purity represented by the Muramasa blades. Particularly, the blade, which even now, had escaped the shogun's wrath. The grand superintendent shoved him with a boot. Go on. We don't have all day. Do you have a poem in mind? Taking brush in hand, Shigeyoshi wrote. As it flies into the sun. How piercing the swallow's song. Feathers turned to dust. Pleased with the steadiness of his hand, the casual but controlled line of his script, he handed the paper to the grand superintendent who held it before him like a proclamation, then rolled it tightly into a cylinder to be delivered to Shigeyoshi's widow. Shigeyoshi was pleased to see that Kenzaburo too had finished his poem and handed it to one of the guards. May I know my son's poem? Shigeyoshi asked. No, the grand superintendent replied. Proceed. Shigeyoshi watched as Kenzaburo let the front of his kimono fall open, revealing his flat belly over a knotted white loincloth. Composing himself, the boy gripped the tanto, removed the blade from the lacquered hardwood sheath, and, holding it in both hands, plunged it into his belly. The curved arc of his body jerked, once, then the boy regained control and drew the blade horizontally across the lower part of his abdomen to free his intestines. At a nod from the grand superintendent, the samurai to Kenzaburo's left drew his long sword, spread his legs, held the blade over his head for one heart-stopping instant, then brought it down in a killing stroke that severed Kenzaburo's head from his shoulders and sent it rolling across the sandalwood base, trailing blood. How unnatural for a father to see his child die, Shigeyoshi thought. The thought was cool, as if he had not just seen the flesh of his blood forced to destroy himself. Beneath the cool, buried deep as within the heart of a glacier, a white-hot kernel of rage flickered. He had cut himself on the blade, let his blood seep into its soul. He and the blade were one now. Even if he were destroyed, his soul would live on, in the blade. The Grand Superintendent nodded in satisfaction. At least your son conducted himself like a samurai. Can you do less? Shigeyoshi took in three long breaths and let them out. Untying the knot of his kimono, he let it fall open. His belly too was flat as the Tokaido road, despite his 40-plus years. He was samurai, and had not failed to practice his skills on a daily basis. Feeling an immense calm settle over him like the fog in Edo Bay, he grasped the honoki wood shirasaya of the katana before him and slowly drew the blade. He almost gasped, but years of Bushido had taught him to control his emotions and he gave no sign. How could they make such a mistake? Or was it a mistake? Had the shogun deliberately ordered the Muramasa placed there as a form of ironic punishment? No. Nor was it a mistake. It was a sign that he, Shigeyoshi, was correct and the shogun was wrong. Freeing the blade entirely, he rocked forward on his knees, got the balls of his feet under him, rose in a twisting motion and plunged the blade forcefully through the Grand Superintendent's belly an instant before a guard rushed forward and killed him with a single blow, albeit not as artful as that which had dispatched his son.